Ukraine's president appeals to the West to relax target limits as Russian glide bombs hammer its front line.
In an online post, President Volodymyr Zelensky said that Russia had dropped more than 800 glide bombs into Ukraine in the past week alone.
Plus, more evidence of North Korea's support for Russia's war on Ukraine.
Irrefutably establishes that the missile fired on Kharkiv was indeed of DPRK origin.
And later in the program, freedom finally arrives for 10 Ukrainians held captive for years in Russia, and how a celebrity American chef is becoming a hero for Ukrainians. Today is Monday, July 1st. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Lori London. Russia began assuming the role of president of the UN Security Council for the month of July on Monday. This as Hungary's nationalist government, which has a history of blocking or delaying funds and arms for Ukraine and maintaining strong ties with Moscow, on Monday began its six-month presidency of the European Council. It comes as Russian missile attacks over the weekend continued across Ukrainian cities, including the capital, Kyiv. For an update on the very latest, we're joined by Anna Chernikova in Kyiv.
To be honest, every weekend in Ukraine is something that people are expecting new shelling coming, and usually this is what happened. And this weekend as well, it was quite a heavy shelling of the city of Kharkiv once again. And unfortunately, the city of Kharkiv is constantly under attack, but this particular one took life of one person and at least 10 people were injured. And also one newborn child was also injured as a result of this attack. Again, the residential areas were under attack mostly, and also one of the post office centers where the packages are basically taking pass to other regions from Kharkiv, including those regions which are closer to the front line. Also, not just Kharkiv, but also the central part of Ukraine was under attack. The city of Kropivnitsky, which is in the central part, was under missile attack. At least at this point, we don't have confirmed information about the main target, but it could be that in that area, the military target was the main goal for the Russian forces this time. And also the city of Kyiv was under attack by two Iskander missiles. Both missiles were destroyed in the air, but debris fall caused damages of the residential building, and a couple of apartments were actually went on fire and were almost completely destroyed. A lot of people had shock and stress reaction that caused them the hospital trip. Basically, people were taken to the hospital due to the mainly stress.
The EU presidency rotates among its member countries, and Hungary is taking over the helm of the European Union as of July 1st. Now, given its strong ties with Russia, and Viktor Orban in recent years has routinely gone against the grain, so to speak, of most other leaders on issues like the war in Ukraine and relations with Russia and China. Have you heard anything about how Kyiv or Ukrainians are feeling about Hungary taking the helm of the European Union?
Yeah, well, actually, Ukraine and Hungary have quite a complicated relationship. And at the recent EU summit that President Zelensky attended, it was a very quick conversation between Mr. Orban and Mr. Zelensky. It looked at least quite an emotional conversation, but it seems that both sides agreed on something, and at least it was a dialogue between them. And after that, there were rumors going around inside of Ukraine that it might be that President of Ukraine and Mr. Orban are up for a meeting. It could be in Ukraine or not. We don't have any details, but it looks like that certain dialogue is ongoing, and at least on the diplomatic level, Ukraine and Hungary do have meetings of the ministers of foreign affairs and do have certain discussions, and Hungary even proposed 11-step agreement or 11-step plan for Ukraine and Hungary relations to proceed and to improve. improve for Ukraine to implement. There are some lines in that plan which Ukraine do not support. However, we might see certain change in the rhetorics. We might see certain change in the relations between Ukraine and Hungary. Here in Ukraine, there is the main hope and the main belief is that still doesn't matter what Mr. Orban is saying and how he is reacting to certain things, especially in connection to Ukraine and aid to Ukraine, but he is still the member of the EU and NATO, and he will still have to follow the overall movement and the overall decisions by most of the member states. So there is probably the main belief.
And finally, Anna, the Ukrainian Parliament Commissioner for Human Rights announced a figure of the number of Ukrainian civilians that are in captivity in Russia.
The Ukrainian Parliament Commissioner for Human Rights, Dmytro Lubinets, announced more than 14,000 Ukrainian civilians remain in Russia's captivity. And he said that this is a very complicated issue because the problem with civilians to be exchanged or to be returned to Ukraine is actually not an exchange but return. Because if we're talking about military exchanges and prisoners of war or medics who were captured at the front line, this is easier because both Ukraine and Russia, they have those in captivity. But if we're talking about civilians, it's only Russian side who have those in captivity because Ukraine do not take Russian citizens in captivity. And basically here, the only negotiation which is going around is for these people to be returned. And according to Lubinets, this is very complicated issue and very complicated negotiations with Russia because, well, Russian authorities do not really want to return people at this point. But in this recent exchange that took place just a couple of days ago, when 100 people were returned, most of them, of course, were military people, but there were some civilians and some activists from Crimea in particular who actually were also returned back to Ukraine. And this was one of those moments when these numbers actually appeared. But again, if we're talking about numbers, just up to 10 people were returned out of 100 who are not military themselves. So this is something that Ukraine will have to deal with Russia and also probably will be involving and already involving other countries to participate and to help for these people to be back to Ukraine.
Anna Chernikova reporting for us from Kyiv. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Laurie.
And the release of those 10 Ukrainian civilians held captive for years in Russia, as Anna mentioned, were freed with the help of Pope Francis. AP correspondent Lawrence Brooks has that part of the story.
10 Ukrainians held prisoner in Russia have been released with the Vatican's mediation. They arrived home overnight, some to Kyiv's international airport, where pre-war posters still hang. There, former prisoners wrapped in blue and yellow flags were reunited with their families and called those who couldn't be there. Some had been captured long before Russia's full-scale invasion, so for some, the separation had lasted many years. Two Ukrainian Greek Catholic priests were among those freed. Speaking in Vatican City, Pope Francis said thank God for their liberation, adding may all the prisoners of this war go home. I'm Lawrence Brooks.
Ukraine's president is appealing to the West to relax targeting limits for Ukraine as Russian glide bombs hammer its front line. Associated Press correspondent Karen Shamis reports.
In an online post, President Volodymyr Zelensky said that Russia had dropped more than 800 glide bombs into Ukraine in the past week alone. Zelensky said Ukraine needed to be able to strike more military targets inside Russia to stop the attacks on Ukraine's front line. Glide bombs are heavy Soviet-era bombs fitted with precision guidance systems and launched from aircraft flying out of range of air defences. The bombs weigh more than a ton and blast targets to smithereens, leaving a huge crater. I'm Karen Shamas.
Javelin anti-tank missile systems are part of a new $275 million aid package the United States is sending to Ukraine. Since 2022, the Javelin has become a symbol of Ukrainian resistance against Russia's aggression. Anna Kostachenko has the story.
Yes! send javelin. This is what Ukrainians have been calling the US anti-tank missile system since Russia invaded Ukraine in 2022. That's because Ukrainian soldiers say these shoulder-fired rockets have proven to be a devastating all-weather weapon against Russian armored vehicles and even helicopters. This 34-year-old chief sergeant of an anti-tank battalion from Poltava goes by his call sign Yar. He says the missile's heat-seeking targeting system is very effective even at night.
Because there's a dramatic difference in temperature, the evaporation of moisture coming from the ground doesn't hinder the view.
One person can operate a javelin alone, but usually a team of two or three soldiers do it together. On the training ground, the 35-year-old fighter, who goes by the call sign Mercedes, trains alongside 22-year-old combat medic known as Poet. Neither man wanted to share his name for security reasons. They both volunteered to join the military within the first few days after Russia's invasion. To join the armed forces, Poet dropped out of the university in Kharkiv, and Mercedes quit his business.
It was a business I really liked, and I wanted to expand. But these horrible people came and ruined everything.
The javelin is what the Pentagon calls a fire-and-forget weapon, explains Sergeant Yar.
After launch, you don't need to watch it closely and adjust the target. The missile does everything itself. Well done, Americans. They did a very good job with this system. It's not only guided by thermal imaging, but also automatically verifies the picture.
The war in Ukraine has made the javelin a much more popular weapon, both in and outside Ukraine. Its manufacturer, Lockheed Martin, is nearly doubling the production of the missile. By the end of 2026, they plan to produce nearly 4,000 missiles annually. Anna Kostyuchenko for VOA News, Eastern Ukraine.
New evidence of North Korea's support for Russia's war in Ukraine amid deepening concerns over a growing alliance between the two authoritarian countries. We hear details from Associated Press correspondent Ben Thomas.
The UN Security Council has been presented with evidence of North Korean missiles being used in Ukraine.
In January 2024,
Jonah Leff, executive director of Conflict Armament Research, offered a detailed analysis of remnants of a ballistic missile that struck Kharkiv on January 2nd.
Carr documented the missile's rocket motor, its tail section.
Showing the council photos of the remnants, he said they had unique features indicating it was manufactured in North Korea last year. Leff says the evidence
irrefutably establishes that the missile fired on Kharkiv was indeed of DPRK origin.
The U.S. and its Western allies accused North Korea and Russia of violating a U.N. embargo on arms exports from the DPRK. Russia dismissed the accusations as baseless. Ben Thomas, Washington.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Lori London. Campaigners in Georgia are seeking to highlight past atrocities committed by invading Russian troops and allied militias during the early 1990s, which they say should have acted as a warning of the dangers posed by Russia long before Moscow's full-scale invasion of Ukraine in 2022. Henry Ridgewell reports from Tbilisi.
As the Soviet Union was collapsing in the early 1990s, Georgia declared independence. There were tensions with ethnic minority groups in the Abkhazia and South Ossetia regions bordering Russia. Many Georgians say Moscow exploited those tensions to stoke conflict. Tamar Chergoleshvili, the founder of the Before Bucha Was Abkhazia campaign, blames Russia for the war.
wars broke out in Georgia that were branded as ethnic conflicts and civil war, but in fact it was Russia that was organizing all those turmoils, wars and bloodsheds in order to dismember Georgia and not to allow newly independent states to become truly independent, truly sovereign, and become the member of the Western democratic world.
Russia disputes that history and insists it sent troops into those regions as peacekeepers. In the conflict between separatists and Georgians from 1989 to 1994, an estimated 10,000 to 30,000 people were killed. Exact figures aren't known, and over 200,000 were forced to flee their homes. Survivors of the conflict say multiple atrocities were committed by local armed separatists, other militia groups, and their Russian allies. Taliko Zarandia recalls the killing of her neighbor's son. Zarandia says a group of militants arrived and charged at them like wolves. They rushed towards the boy and asked how old he was. He replied that he was 15. "You deserve 15 bullets then," they replied. Then, she says, they shot him 15 times in the head. Russia denies committing atrocities, but the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe describes what happened in Abkhazia as ethnic cleansing. The harrowing testimony of survivors is reminiscent of the accounts from Ukrainians following Russia's February 2022 full-scale invasion. In the Ukrainian cities of Bucha and Irpin, survivors describe similar killings, rapes and torture, also denied by Russia despite widespread evidence and mass graves. Chergoleshvili says Ukrainian journalists contacted her for information on what had happened in Georgia.
We all knew that something horrible had happened in Abkhazia, but it was so dusty. No one wanted to go through it ever again. But Ukrainians like made me to go through the material before giving them, and I had goosebumps and I felt so shameful.
The campaign, which is touring the United States and Europe, includes documentary screenings and presentations detailing the horrors that happened in Georgia.
To remind the world and ourselves about forgotten victims from Georgia that suffered the same aggression that Russia is using now against Ukraine, to warn the West that if they don't stop Russia in Ukraine now, they will have to spend 100 times more, like in another 30 years.
Russia invaded Georgia again in 2008. It still occupies 20% of Georgian territory, including Abkhazia and South Ossetia. Many Georgians say their fate should have provided ample warning of the dangers posed by Russia long before its invasion of Ukraine. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, Tbilisi.
As in many countries, job seekers in Ukraine in their 50s and 60s have a harder time than younger workers. As Leja Bakalets reports from Kyiv, one organization is trying to change that by taking advantage of Ukraine's wartime labor shortage.
Sporting an elegant hat with jewelry and heels, 57-year-old Evgenia Kovalenko rushes to work in an art gallery every morning during the week.
I feel that I'm needed here.
Kovalenko lost her job at the start of Russia's full-scale invasion, and it took her a year and a half to find a new one.
I registered on job search sites and sent resumes every day, but with no result. My age was an issue. Nobody needs me.
A situation like Kovalenko's is common in the Ukrainian labor market, says Tina Nikolova, founder of Enjoying Life Charitable Foundation, a group that supports older adults.
Our society is very prejudiced. There was a vacancy for a document management specialist only for a person up to 45 years old. They explained that the office is on the fifth floor, and it might be difficult for a person after 45 to walk the stairs.
The foundation started to teach older adults how to fit into the modern labor market. Kovalenko was one of 3,000 people who registered to take the courses each year.
These were psychological support courses. We were also taught how to write resumes and cover letters.
The foundation's work predates Russia's full-scale invasion. The foundation launched Adult Intern Week in 2018, aiming to match older job seekers with companies that need interns.
At first, I just asked my business friends to please hire an adult intern. Then 7 companies participated. This year, 300 companies have already registered.
Among them is the Integritas law firm. It started by recruiting interns, but now is ready to offer jobs.
We had a great experience having the older adult interns. With huge life experience and emotional stability, they could concentrate well on their duties.
Kovalenko's supervisor is also happy with the decision to hire her.
I have always worked with young people, mostly with men, but now they are in the armed forces. Eugenia, she is great. She is already aware of all the technical and cultural aspects of our job.
The Enjoying Life Charitable Foundation says it hopes the current labor market situation will push more employers to follow Murandevich's example.
Due to the war in Ukraine, there is a huge shortage of personnel. Many of our men are fighting. That is why we're seeing greater demand. Old adults can do a lot now.
The group's database has many occupations long dominated by young people, from baristas to social media marketing specialists, all of them eager to put their experience to work. Lesia Bakalets, VOA News, Kyiv.
And finally today, TV personality Rachel Ray is a U.S.-based chef, author, and celebrity, but Ukrainians know her better for her charity work to help the war-torn country. Omiliano Shudlak brings us that story.
Let's give it a shot.
Rachel Ray has millions of followers on social media, a handful of Emmy Awards, as well as appearances in top U.S. TV shows and animated films. During the COVID-19 pandemic, her house burned down and her dog died. She went to get another rescue from a shelter, but in the process learned about Ukraine.
I rescued another animal, and the lady who was training my dog was the sister of a gentleman that worked with Andriy.
730 days.
Andriy Futey is president of the Ukrainian Congress Committee of America, an organization that has been representing the Ukrainian community in the United States since 1940. In the summer of 2022, he brought Ray to Ukraine for the first time. She's been back 5 more times.
She herself purchased over 10,000 individual first aid kits that went to the front lines to our boys and girls there.
She's now an ambassador of the Unbroken National Rehabilitation Center in Lviv. Ray remembers when she met the Stepanenko family, who suffered from a Russian missile strike at the Kramatorsk railway station.
It overwhelmed me that a little girl could say, "Hey, do you like my earrings?" And she has no limbs. She's sitting on the bed, and her mom has one leg, and her grandmother was destroyed, blown up in front of her. Her grandmother's dead, and her little brother's sitting on the bed next to her. Her mom's over here, all of them in one room, and they're just so grateful and happy to be alive.
Since then, Ray has brought culinary equipment and medical supplies to Ukraine, as well as held workshops in orphanages and hospitals during her every visit.
I read a bunch of Ukrainian recipes, and I kind of made my own concoctions. We always do demonstrations and chats and fun things when we're here. But the reason we're at the facilities, we're building out a kitchen there that will serve 4,000 beds 3 times a day.
During her latest visit to Ukraine, Ray was accompanied by Noah Sims, a U.S. culinary show Master Chef participant.
I tell people all the time, if you can't go yourself to Ukraine, or you can't give a lot of money to Ukraine, you can, and it's free, you can keep them in your mind and on your lips and in your heart. And that's what everyone in the world should be doing that believes in democracy.
Ray hopes to return to Ukraine in the fall of 2024. This will be her 7th visit. Омеляна Шудляк for VOA News, Lviv, Ukraine.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And on social media, just follow VOA News. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Lori London.